I call the meeting of the Committee of Energy, Finance, and Policy to order. We have a quorum. Our first item of business is the approval of minutes. I may have a motion to approve the minutes for the meeting on February 27th, 2025. Representative Sexton moves to approve the minutes from February 27th, 2025. Is there any discussion?
So moved.
Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. The motion prevails and the minutes of February 27th are approved.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not quite sure, maybe this is more focused to that, Mr. Chair. We're in, I guess, the fourth week of committee. We have budget forecasts coming out on Thursday, and we haven't yet had any budget overviews from the agencies of our jurisdiction. So just wondering when those might be calendared?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We're looking potentially towards the end of March to have those. Thank you.
Representative Aiken.
Thank you. Quick follow-up. I think end of March, with deadlines being the first week of April, that can be pretty concerning. And so would really, I know we have not used all of our committee time every time. I think there might be an opportunity there to invite the agencies in to do their budget overview. I think it would be, we have a lot of new members on both sides of the aisle and always helpful to hear from the agencies about the things that they're working on and the work that they would like to continue. So just encourage that be done sooner than later, please.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Aiken.
Chair Szczesinski is here to move his bill. We referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Chair Szczesinski moved that House File 1738 is referred to Ways and Means Committee. Chair Szczesinski, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Thank you, members. That is my motion to move House File 1738 to the Ways and Means Committee. This bill, as we're kind of getting towards the beginning of March, trying to find some a little bit less controversial bills to be hearing in our committee, this is beginning that process. As Minnesotans, we passed the 2040 bill last year in Minnesota legislature. That is to set the goal for the state of Minnesota to have a carbon-free standard by 2040. Xcel Energy just announced last week or the week before that they will meet that goal by 2035. And I believe there are other investor-owned utilities that have matched that same timeline of 2035 to meet that goal 5 years early. The stated goal of the RDA has been used to develop renewable energy projects across the state. With the stated goal of the legislature having been passed in 2023 of the carbon-free by 2040, it's time for the state legislature to get out of the way. House File 1738 primarily is focused on driving the cost of electricity down. We will all admit that utilities will reach that goal. By the iron fist of government, our utilities across the state will meet the carbon-free standard in Minnesota. Minnesotans, as we as legislators, have a duty to then, if those goals will be reached, to simply get out of the way, drive down the cost of energy for Minnesotans. That's why this bill is before us. Our role as legislators is to look at the unique aspects of what industry can do, families can do, businesses can do, and what our utilities can do. We either trust the utilities to do their job with the work and the cooperation of the PUC, or we don't. We do not need to press the thumb of the legislative power to pick and choose which projects happen and which projects don't. Oftentimes in St. Paul, we believe that it's free money. This dollar's come to our pockets, and it's our job to spend it. We have a choice whether it's Social Security taxes or RDA funding or taxes on casks in Minnesota, which is where this money's derived from. Do utility payers in XL territory spend the money better in their home, in their business, Or do we spend the money better here in the Minnesota House? The bill before you recognizes the fact that businesses and families, in small ways, maybe it's an extra cup of coffee, maybe it's their own utility bill, maybe it's an extra car payment or extra gallon of gas, or maybe it's investing in a piece of equipment for their business. They will invest the money better than we as legislators could ever do. While RDA projects across the state, I've carried them in the past. I've asked for money out of the RDA fund. And I'm saying that Minnesotans deserve the right to spend their own money the way they best see fit. And it's time for the legislature to get out of the way. Since the beginning and the inception of the RDA fund, the tax on or the fee on nuclear casks, over $900 million have been taken out of the pockets of ratepayers and put in the pockets of someone else. That's the bill before us. I asked Mr. Eloff maybe to just go back and talk a little bit of the history of the RDA and what it's done in the past and what it can do with the passage of this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Eloff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Representative Swedzinski said, the RDA has a long history going back legislatively to 1994, but it really starts before then when Xcel constructed the Prairie Island nuclear plant, and I think it began operations in the mid-70s. They expected, and everybody else expected, that the federal government would deliver on its process, on its promise, to develop a national repository for radioactive waste from nuclear plants across the country. As you all know, that didn't happen. The Prairie Island plant had a cooling pool into which radioactive rods could be kept while they cooled off for a while. But as time wore on, it became clear that they had to deal with the waste issue themselves, that they could not depend upon the federal government to fulfill its promise. So, and to do that, they needed a certificate of need from the state of Minnesota. And this issue was dealt with in 1994 in what everyone who was there at the time told me was a very, very controversial process, unlike any I've seen in my 20 years here at the legislature. And what was done at that time as part of the compromise to allow the waste facility to be constructed was to set up this Renewable Development Fund. It's called the Renewable Development Fund at that time. And at the beginning in 1994, $500,000 for each cask of radioactive waste was to be put into that fund. And the directions given by the legislature were very general. The funds were only to be expended for the development of renewable energy sources. Couldn't get much broader than that. And the money sat there for a couple of years. In 1999, there was additional legislation saying that the public utilities must approve expenditures from the fund. And in 2000, what it actually started out as was a fund for research and development projects with respect to renewable energy. And there was an advisory board consisting of I think some Xcel ratepayers, the company, some legislators, a number of other people that sent out an RFP asking for projects that wanted to be funded to come and present the projects to that board. The board made recommendations to the commission at that time, which I think had final say over the project. And the mechanics of how that decision-making process worked varied over the years. In 2003, the legislature appropriated money out of that fund for what was called the Renewable Energy Production Incentive, REPI, R-E-P-I, which was mirrored on a federal program. And they used that money to create 100 megawatts of wind. My recollection is they paid a penny and a half per kilowatt hour of production. That was increased to a target of 200 megawatts of wind in 2005, and that program went on. It paid people who installed wind projects over a 10-year period for each kilowatt hour of electricity that they produced. In 2007, the Monticello nuclear plant was required to contribute to the renewables development account. It was still $500,000 per cask for Prairie Island, Monticello $350,000 per cask because they were smaller. In 2009, money was given to the University of Minnesota's Institute for Renewable Energy and Environment for a period of 3 years for various kinds of research projects. And over these years, there were grant cycles. I was asking Mr. Evans earlier today if he remembered how many there were. I would think maybe four or five. Every couple of years, this process would kick in and money would be awarded to projects along those lines. But more and more in the last, I don't think the last, I was trying to remember when the last grant cycle might have occurred. I would say at least 10 years ago, probably more than like 15. And I'm usually wrong on these things, so it's probably between 15 or 20. But more and more it came to be the case that the legislature would make direct appropriations from this fund. The Office of the Legislative Auditor did a report on the fund in 2012, I think, and had reported that from 2001 to 2010, a total of $165 million had been contributed to the fund, which funded 200 different grants with a median grant award of about $245,000. And in that 10-year period, 46% of the grants went for projects that were dealing with biomass, 17% to solar projects, 10% to wind projects, and 6% to conservation. One of the recommendations from that OLA report was that was to make the renewable development account a state fund, because up to that time it really hadn't been. You've got a private company contributing money to an account. Is it public money? It was a little foggy, and the OLA recommended it be made a state fund, and that was done in 2017. The projects that were funded by the renewable development account had to meet the criterion that they benefit XL ratepayers, not exclusively benefit XL ratepayers. They could benefit other people in the state, but XL ratepayers had to be benefited in one way or another from the funding. It's funded a wide variety of projects, and as you can see in this bill, some of those projects were also production-based incentives. Made Minnesota solar panels and XL Solar Reward program, and those are both programs that essentially signed contracts with people who signed up to make payments for a period of 10 years, and some of those payments will occur after, if this law is enacted, after the RDA program is repealed, and there are provisions in this to make those payments out of the general fund. Ms. Ng has put together a nice compendium of spending for the last 5 or 6 years out of this fund. If you're interested more in what kinds of projects have been funded, we might turn to her.
Thank you, Mr. Iloff. Chair Swazinski, do you have any additional comments?
I think, was Mrs. Ng going to maybe speak a little bit, or you don't have Ms. to Ng. If you don't like?
I could.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, from the accounting at the state, the appropriations begin in 2018, and in that year, and in every year since, there's been payments to the Made in Minnesota incentive payments, as well as the Made in Minnesota administration. But additionally, in 2018, there was a biomass economic impact study, as well as a Duluth steam plant funding for $15 million. And in 2019, there was the same Made in Minnesota payments, but then in 2020, there was a cost-benefit analysis from the 2019 session for $150,000. And in 2021, there was the one payment to the Prairie Island Net Zero project, as well as Granite Falls Hydropower and the Community Energy Transition Project. In 2022, there were more appropriations. The Prairie Island Net Zero, Granite Falls again, There was an ag weather study, microgrid research, the solar on Minnesota universities, mountain iron solar project, community energy transition, clean energy career training, West Central research appropriation. There was an energy conservation loan program established, and then a construction materials environmental impact study. And then in 2023, there was the big payment to Prairie Island Net Zero Project, Granite Falls Hydropower, the microgrids at St. Thomas again, solar on schools, the energy conservation loan program, and then there was an energy savings loan there. Beginning in 2024, there was the electric vehicle rebates, electric school bus grants, electric panel upgrade grants, energy storage incentive grants, the microgrid federal funding, electric vehicle rebates for auto dealers, St. Thomas microgrid again, Granite Falls Hydroelectric. There was a weather trend study, and then an energy savings loan as well. And now in this year, 2025, there's microgrid research, the electric vehicle rebates, the school bus, the electric school bus grants, the electric panel upgrade grants, the energy and storage incentive grants, the St. Thomas microgrid federal funding, electric vehicle rebates for auto dealers, the Granite Falls Hydroelectric, the Sabathany Community Center. There was a grant to Dakota County, as well as a grant to the anaerobic digester. There was a carbon pipeline study, solar array appropriation, energy conservation loan program, a weather trend study, and I think that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Zhang. Chair Swazinski, do you have any follow-up?
Not really, no. We can answer some questions, or we could have, I think there might be a few testifiers, some for, yeah, some against.
There are some testifiers. We can move to testifiers now and then take questions as we go. Sam Smith with the Department of Commerce, could you step forward? And then on deck, Dan King with Dairy Solutions. Darcy, you're missing the letter.
Chair Murphy, members of the committee, my name is Sam Smith, and I'm here to testify on House File 1738 on behalf of the Department of Commerce. The Renewable Development Account has committed hundreds of millions of dollars to accelerate the development of clean energy technologies, with programs ranging from solar for schools to the new geothermal feasibility study program launched this year. Since the Renewable Development Account, now the Renewable Development Fund, now the Renewable Development Account, which was established in 1994, legislators have made numerous updates on how the funds are utilized. This fund was established for the purpose of developing renewable sources of electricity in exchange for storing additional dry cask spent fuel storage at Xcel's Prairie Island and Monticello nuclear power facilities. Storage at these sites continues, and repealing this program would be a significant change in policy. One of the more impactful efforts funded through the RDA has been the Solar Reward Program. Solar Rewards fills a niche that most other programs do not. It's customer-sited, performance-based solar incentives that encourage solar for residents, including low-income as well as commercial projects. To date, more than 7,000 projects have received funding from Solar Rewards. These projects span Xcel Energy territory. Under the current design, Xcel Energy operates the programs, but Commerce provides oversight to the program, reviewing and approving the program design on an annual basis. Today, Solar Rewards provides more incentives to income-eligible households to adopt solar than any other Minnesota program. The legislation proposed today would terminate this program, allowing existing participants to receive their production payments, but eliminating any future incentives. This legislation also shifts operations of the program to disperse the payment to Commerce. We have done similar implementation for the Made in Minnesota Solar Program. Thank you for your time. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Are there any questions for the testifier? Thank you. Dan King and then Aurora Volstrom on deck, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Murphy, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Dan King, Chief Technology Officer at Darcy Solutions, a Minnesota-based energy technology company deploying groundwater enhanced geothermal heating and cooling. Here to express my support for the renewable development account. This fund has played a critical role in making Minnesota a leader in energy innovation. It's helped deploy innovative technologies, support local businesses, and strengthen our energy economy, all while leveraging Minnesota's deep expertise in engineering, energy, and manufacturing. We understand the RDA is funded by Xcel Energy ratepayers, and we don't take that lightly, but the RDA funds exactly the type of forward-looking investments that pay off for ratepayers in the long run, helping to develop and deploy smarter, more efficient, and more resilient energy solutions right here in Minnesota. The RDA has a proven track record of supporting projects that deliver real value, from expanding renewable electricity to advancing technologies like geothermal, energy storage, and grid modernization. Repealing the RDA would have a negative impact on Minnesota's innovation ecosystem and send a message that we're stepping back rather than leaning forward when it comes to building the energy systems of the future. I urge you to protect the renewable development accounts and continue supporting innovation that benefits Minnesota's economy, energy system, and communities, while ensuring that Minnesota will remain a dominant force in the energy industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. King. Are there any questions for Mr. King? Thank you.
Thank you.
Aurora Volstrom on next, and then Michelle Benson on deck.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Aurora Vautrin, and I'm the Legislative Director for 100%. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today with our concerns on HF 1738, a bill to repeal the Renewable Development Account. The context of why the RDA exists is an important place to start this conversation. In 1994, the Renewable Development Account was created with the intention that it would exist as long as casks of spent nuclear waste were stored at Prairie Island. To repeal the RDA without removal of these casks, or even a plan to do so, is concerning. Additionally, the RDA is an important tool for the state of Minnesota to meet our statewide decarbonization goals. Having a dedicated source of revenue to invest in our clean energy future ensures that our state can continue to make progress in our transition no matter what. Our legislature is tasked with making difficult decisions about where our state budget should go. The RDA ensures that we don't have to pit other needs of Minnesotans, like education and infrastructure, against investments in a decarbonized future that benefits all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Volstrom. Are there any questions for the testifier? Thank you. Michelle Benson, followed by Sarah Webby.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members, and Representative Swedinsky. My name is Michelle Benson. I'm the Director for Energy Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of House File 1738. It phases out the Renewable Development Account. The Chamber and our more than 6,300 members believe in the triple goal of affordable, reliable, and cleaner energy. Meeting all three parts of this goal is essential for Minnesota businesses to remain competitive regionally, nationally, and globally. The legislature created the predecessor to the RDA in 1994 to help develop renewable energy options that were not cost competitive at the time. Over 30 years later, utility-level renewable energy projects have gained support in Minnesota. The RDA is a relic of a time when renewable energy needed special support. Today, the RDA raises rates on Xcel ratepayers. Today, the RDA is a tax on a carbon-free, 24/7, reliable source of electricity. If it is the policy of the legislature that renewable energy is a statewide priority, then the legislature should transparently fund projects out of the general fund, as House File 1738 proposes. Today, renewable energy projects have significant market advantage due to regulatory mandates. As we approach the 2040 zero carbon goal, renewable energy will have a significant share of our generation capacity. If House File 1738 appropriately phases out special funds for renewable energy projects that are ready to compete in Minnesota's regulated energy market. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce supports House File 1738 as it closes the RDA to create transparent renewable energy funding and phases out funding as the renewable energy market grows. It also lowers rates for Xcel Energy customers. We thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Swedinski.
Thank you, Ms. Benson. Are there any questions for Ms. Benson? Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Benson. Can you help me understand? You were saying that this bill would provide more transparency. What is not transparent about the, you know, the way that this is, that projects are currently funded through this? My understanding is that we approve this every year at the legislature.
Ms. Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Jones. The legislature, you'll see the forecast comes out on Thursday. They talk about a general fund forecast. They don't talk about the healthcare access fund. They don't talk about the renewable energy fund. Minnesotans don't follow these small funds. Most legislators don't follow these small funds. And so certain people on committees like yours are fully engaged and understand. But to be fully transparent with the people of Minnesota, we should show the priority where people pay attention, and that's in the general fund. Renewable energy can be a general fund priority, and we can save ratepayers' money with this bill.
Representative Jones, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Benson. I guess I don't quite fully agree that we're not doing this in a transparent way. All the things that we do in the legislature are fully out there and available to both legislators and the public.
Thank you, Ms. Benson. Sarah Webby, followed by Bobby King.
Quite loud. Good afternoon, Chair Murphy, members of the committee. My name is Sarah Webby. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industry Association today. We encourage members of the committee to vote against House File 1738 for three reasons broadly. RDA funds were created to support emerging clean energy technologies. Solar Rewards encourages rooftop solar, which provides unique benefits by avoiding land use and transmission costs while enabling Minnesotans to participate directly in our clean energy future. And the sudden changes proposed by this bill would disrupt the stability that a still developing rooftop solar industry needs, and do so right when we are finally making real progress in the low income market. First, I would like to say that the RDA is not a tax on nuclear. Every form of energy has pros and cons, and there are economic and social and environmental costs that result from the use of nuclear energy that Minnesotans and utilities must pay for. The RDA is a down payment on managing the negative externalities associated with storing casks of waste on the Prairie Island tribal community land. Addressing solar rewards, our concern is that House File 1738 makes sudden changes that disrupt the stability of the industry. Abrupt adjustments to planned programs creates uncertainty, which is an active disincentive for investment in Minnesota that sends a signal to companies that they should instead consider other states and markets whose industry-building energy priorities are seen as more predictable and less risky. A sudden abrupt transition from a program with a 10-year commitment to a program with a 2-year commitment is the kind of solar coaster policy that has slowed the development of the solar industry by causing uncertainty and instability. Small rooftop solar is standing on one leg now more than ever with federal uncertainty and state policy matters. And that's why we shouldn't make abrupt and drastic changes. And in addition, the bill sends a contrary message to the many Minnesotans who are excited to participate in the state's clean energy transition. Finally, I want to just touch on success with the low-income solar program. the legislature directed 50% of the solar rewards funding to go to low-income XL ratepayers last year, and it has been enormously successful. The residential segment of those funds have been fully allocated already as of the end of February. A lot of this is because the solar industry reacted to the legislature's directive by establishing new programs targeted to serve that market. That market is robust and growing, and it would be a real challenge to see the market adjust and have to face these funds being ripped away now before that process can begin to bear fruit. In conclusion, we encourage the members of the committee to not vote for this bill. We thank you, and we're happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Webby. Are there any questions for Ms. Webby? Thank you. Bobby King, followed by Andy Goak.
Yeah, that wasn't me. For the record, let the record show.
Right.
Mr. Chair and committee, thanks for the opportunity to testify. My name is Bobby King. I'm the Minnesota State Director for Solar United Neighbors. I'm testifying on behalf of Sun and the Clear Energy Coalition, which was formed to advance a clean, local, equitable, affordable, and reliable energy future. Members include Black Visions, Cooperative Energy Futures, the Minnesota Environmental Justice Table, Sierra Club, North Star Chapter, Vote Solar, Community Power, Institute for Social Self-Reliance, Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light, in addition to us. We believe that the RDA should be maintained, that it's an important dedicated funding source for the advancement of renewable energy in our state and has served the public interest well. When we speak specifically about the Solar Rewards Program and add something to what's already, hopefully add something to the conversation. So in order to get the XL incentive solar rewards program, you got to limit the size of your array to 120% of your usage. And in our opinion, it's been an effective partnership between XL, which implements the program, the Minnesota Department of Commerce, which oversees the program, solar installers, and XL's customers that want to go solar. So that's a lot of moving parts. The program, there's a comment period through the Minnesota PUC, and every year the program's been gradually improved and been changed to adjust to the current market situations. I want to say that this solar rewards incentive does benefit all XL customers in at least two ways. One, XL gets the renewable energy credit when someone uses this incentive to go solar, so they apply that REC towards their renewable energy goals. And, you know, we have a mandate to get to 2040, but one of our concerns is about can we create pathways for homeowners, small business owners, farmers to get into that mix of being energy producers, contributing, and also financially benefiting. And we think the XL Solar Rewards Program helps accomplish that. The other thing is that it's for a small investment, it helps leverage private investment to get that renewable energy onto the grid. Lastly, someone else has mentioned the low-income program. Last year, through our buying groups and education, we helped 25 low-income folks go solar. This is one of the most robust programs in the country for doing this, and we're learning a lot about how to overcome the hurdles to get solar to low-income folks. And it really has multiple benefits to these homeowners and to the communities. Most immediately, it lowers their energy bill for the foreseeable future. And we know low-income families tend to pay a higher percentage of their income towards their energy bill. It gets renewable power into the system, into the mix, onto the grid. And then for homeowners, it adds value to their home, which is their largest asset. So we think these funds are well spent, and we'd encourage maintaining the RDA. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. King? Thank you. Andy Goak, followed by George Damian.
The chair again. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Andy Goak, an account representative with Apadana Solar in New Hope, Minnesota, who employs about 50 full-time staff in the solar industry in between us and our sister companies. I've worked with great multifamily affordable housing organizations who the majority have done multiple solar projects to lower their operating costs thanks to solar rewards. Some of those organizations are Aon, Trellis, Vitus, Wellington Management, RS Eden, who does affordable housing and drug treatment programs, Alliance Housing, Three Rivers Community Action, JO Companies, 4D Property Owners, and many more multifamily organizations. I've also worked with a number of low-income single-family providers, including Urban Homeworks, Habitat for Humanity, who have done a ton of solar projects specifically because of solar rewards. These projects happen because of solar rewards, and without exaggeration, I estimate that over 90% of these organizations would not do solar if these solar rewards were not available. That's a 90% decrease in these affordable housing and other nonprofit organizations being able to lower their costs through solar. This upfront incentive that is embedded in solar rewards is vital for those programs to move forward. As it's been mentioned, the solar rewards in 2025 has already run out for income qualified residential funding, and it was just 1.5 months into the year. And I know that the projects on the wait list, that those will not happen if funding doesn't get added. That said, I'd like to see solar rewards increase back to the levels it's been before, which is about $10,000 level, which I believe has been the majority dollar amount over the previous years. And lastly, I strongly oppose repealing the renewable development account, which is a reliable source of income for solar rewards for Xcel storage of nuclear fuel, and strongly oppose to sunsetting the solar rewards program earlier than 2035. And with Canada imposing today a 25% tariff on Minnesota for power that we buy from them, and knowing that in 2022, Minnesota imported 1/5 of our electricity from Canada, we need to create more U.S.-produced energy, not less. And solar rewards plays a small yet impactful role for that for our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Goak? Thank you. Our last testifier is George Damian.
Don't sit on that.
I'm going to avoid that chair.
Thank you, Chair Murphy, and committee members. My name is George Damian. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Clean Energy Economy Minnesota, also known as SEEM. SEEM is an industry-led, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization representing the business voice of clean energy in Minnesota. We're here to express our deep concerns about House File 1738, a bill to eliminate the renewable development account, which threatens to halt the progress of renewable energy initiatives and jeopardize Minnesota's leadership in the clean energy sector. For years, the RDA has supported research, development, and deployment of renewable energy projects across Minnesota. The fund has played a crucial role in advancing technologies that create jobs, attract investment, and strengthens our energy independence. Without it, many promising projects could face delays or cancellation, setting Minnesota's transition to more sustainable energy and resilient future back. Eliminating the RDA would have serious consequences, including the loss of innovation. Without funding, cutting-edge research and development in renewable energies could stagnate, limiting technological advancements. Economic impact. The energy industry supports tens of thousands of jobs across Minnesota. Reducing funding could lead to job losses and decrease economic growth. And finally, increase energy costs. Investments in renewable energy help stabilize long-term energy costs, and eliminating the RDA could slow the expansion of cost-effective clean energy solutions. In closing, SEEM and our business members look forward to continuing to work with legislators and other stakeholders to identify opportunities for the RDA to evolve to support energy advancement of innovation and emerging technologies that will further decarbonize our economy and lower costs for Minnesotans, all while creating market opportunities and jobs across our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Damian? Are there any members of the public that would like to testify? So now it's time for member discussion. Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Swazinski. Just to start out, just a question of which utility does this impact?
This impacts Xcel ratepayers, so Xcel.
Okay.
Representative Jones.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Swazinski. And do you represent any customers of that utility?
Yes.
Can you help me understand that a little bit? Like, which parts of the district?
Chair.
Mr. Chair.
I can already get in there.
Sorry. Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Jones, kind of in Yellow Medicine County and Chippewa County.
Representative Jones.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I also represent a huge portion of, so actually all of my district is represented by Xcel territory. And I'll say that the majority of my, a vast majority, I actually have never heard of one person in my district say that they do not want us moving as fast as possible on clean energy. I actually do want to agree with one of the testifiers, Ms. Benson, in her aim for more affordable, reliable, and clean energy. And so, I think there is some overlap here that we do want clean energy, and that does take investment. And this has been a successful tool for that investment. We've heard from several testifiers there. I also want to mention something that Ms. Vautrin brought up. The genesis of this program really, really matters. And so I want to ask, are there still casks at Prairie Island?
Chair Swazinski.
Chair Murphy, Representative Jones, there are casks in Monticello and Prairie Island.
Representative Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Swazinski. And I think that's very important for us to acknowledge that the reason why this program exists is because we have nuclear waste stored at Prairie Island. And that was a really tough compromise, tough negotiation that happened. And the criteria or all of the things that the situation that created that has not changed. There are still casks there. And so removing this part of the negotiation, part of the agreement, would be going back on that agreement. I'll also note some of the other I actually talked to one of the senators who was there in 1994 at the time, and she kind of talked about the entities who were at the table. So environmentalists, the tribes, job seekers, and then tax-based stakeholders. And so those are a lot of different competing interests. And this was the compromise. If we are taking away this one piece of that compromise, the entire thing unravels. So I think my other question is, have you spoken with tribes, environmentalists, and other taxpayers in creation of this bill?
Chair Swazinski.
I've always talked to anyone that's wanted to talk. I've talked extensively with a number of years ago when a different bill was moving forward. My concern was because the ultimate chance of casks either being moved or the removal of the RDA, that there was a commitment made between Xcel Energy and Prairie Island that if in that case that the United States got their act together and created a storage facility or a refinement facility, which ultimately may happen as well, that their agreement between the tribes and Xcel Energy would exist whether or not the RDA exists or the cast removed.
Representative Jones?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Swazinski. I think this just all goes to say that we need all the stakeholders at the table, and that right now we just heard from job creators and from kind of more environmental groups that their concerns are not being met by this bill. And so I would definitely suggest to folks on our side to not support it.
Chair Swazinski, any follow-up?
Nope.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Swazinski, if this is your bipartisan, non-contentious bill, I'd like to see the contentious one. we have, yeah. So a few things. You used as one of your reasons to eliminate this was that you mentioned that Xcel is on track for 2030, or on path for 2035.
Yep.
And which was fantastic to hear of their progress, and I think that's a great thing. But are you also aware that renewables are not just used to decarbonize our grid, but are used to decarbonize many other sectors of our economy?
Chair Swazinski.
It can.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, absolutely. And in fact, let's take a few of them. One, commercial and residential, where the biggest, one of the most significant sources of greenhouse gas emissions there. Oh, by the way, while Xcel is on track for 2035, we have a statewide goal of being net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. And I view that as a goal that we must hit if we care about the future of our kids and grandkids. So in the commercial and residential sectors, do you know how much those sectors, Chair Swazinski, have gone up since 2005 in their greenhouse gas emissions?
Chair Swazinski.
I believe as we do attract jobs to Minnesota, that number potentially could go up because we're producing things, yes.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Swazinski, yes, and perhaps, but what I can tell you is since 2005, commercial has gone up 48% greenhouse gas emissions and residential 38%. And that's primarily with gas, right? And one of the other ways that you can decarbonize is to use electricity instead for things like geothermal, air source heat pumps, even electric panel upgrades that then will allow a customer to be able to switch vehicles. So each of those things that I mentioned, as well as the State Building Energy Conservation Revolving Loan Fund, were all projects funded by the RDA. Chair Swazinski, on transportation, do you know how we're doing on transportation emissions since 2005?
Chair Murphy, sorry, I didn't go through you again. Representative Kraft, it's my belief that, you know, as our economy has a chance to grow, we are going to be driving more. So we will be increasing that.
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Chair Swazinski, not quite right. Actually, our emissions are down a little bit, 6% since 2005, as cars get more energy efficient and as we transition to electric vehicles. However, it's not nearly enough. And so part of things we've done, and it's our number one source of greenhouse gas emissions. Some of the funds from RDA have gone to EV rebates, electric school bus grants, even auto dealer grants to help that transition, which brings more electricity onto the grid. Chair Swazinski, what about agriculture? Do you know how we're doing in agriculture greenhouse gas emissions since 2005?
Chair Swazinski.
I'm guessing we're holding even or potentially up or down a little bit.
Mr. Chair, ding, 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 ding.
Got her covered, Chair Murphy.
I can't believe you got that right. Wow. if you had stopped that, we're probably about flat, you would have been right.
Perfect.
And it's our number two source right now, 25%. Some of the RDA grants went to a wind to ammonia program that actually can start decarbonizing and help our farmers to be able to create ammonia-based fertilizer here in Minnesota, which right now we import that from outside of Minnesota. So these are all things that have been funded by the RDA. So I think your view of, hey, Xcel's looking like they're going to hit 2035 is really short-sighted. I also want to comment that, talk about your comment that said, it's time for us to get out of the way. I think with the comments I just made, I think it's pretty clear that we're not yet where we need to be in this broader area. But I would be more amenable to that argument if in this country we were getting out of the way of subsidizing fossil fuels. Do you have any idea how much in this country we subsidize fossil fuels, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Swazinski.
Mr. Chair Murphy, Representative Kraft, it's my belief it's not a subsidy, but it's that they allow tax relief for investments that they make.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Swazinski, I would love to have that conversation on the tax committee that they're not a break for folks. But there are, according to the Environmental and Energy Study Institute, $757 billion of direct and implicit subsidies to the fossil fuel industry. So government has their thumb on the scale in a big way already for fossil fuels, and that's not even taking into account the cost that that puts onto our kids and grandkids for the air pollution and the greenhouse gas mitigation that happens. So, you know, I'm ready to have the conversation. It's time to get out of the way with renewables, but we need to be getting out of the way of subsidizing fossil fuels. The last thing that I'll say, in an era right now where the federal government is turning their backs on this, on renewables, and sacrificing our kids' future to give more money to the rich. And by the way, it's not only that, but it is economically ignorant what is happening. Right now, the renewable industry across the world is $1.4 trillion a year, growing to $2.5 trillion. So what we're doing at a federal level, burying our heads in the sand, is not only bad for the environment and our kids, but it's bad for us economically. So given all that's happening there, I think maintaining the RDA in Minnesota so that we can invest in the right kinds of projects, in renewables, in these other areas to decarbonize our economy that will have other huge benefits for Minnesotans is the right thing to do, and I urge a no vote on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we keep hearing that solar is becoming more efficient, and I believe it is. Panels are becoming more efficient and can better utilize sun. We hear that costs are coming down dramatically. I've heard the adjective used that way. But yet we have all of these reward programs. Heard a couple today, solar rewards, solar energy production incentive program. We've had a bill hearing on net metering, all programs that are designed to incentivize solar. And one of today's testifiers, I believe I heard him correctly when he said 90% of the, I assume, Minnesota residents would choose not to do solar if it weren't for the incentive. And so I just have to pose the theoretical question, at what point do we anticipate these programs to be to end, and when would these electricity sources be able to be self-supporting and have a return on investment? And I just pose that question. And Representative Kraft, you've mentioned quite often carbon-free electricity, and I would just like to hear an example of one of those sources, taking into account the entire life cycle of that production of power, and if there is, in fact, a totally carbon-free source of electricity.
Representative Kraft?
I will yield. So carbon-free power in our definition, in our statute, I believe includes solar, wind, hydro to a certain extent, nuclear, and I think there are some others, but those are the definitions in our statute. And then your other question was anything truly carbon-free. You know, there's no free lunch in anything that we do, and the production of various sources does often generates some carbon in that production. I will say, as we decarbonize our economy and we decarbonize industrial processes, those amounts will go down. But for example, in the case of solar, which we talked about previously in this committee, generally, it takes between 1 and 3 years of a solar panel's life before it is completely paid any kind of carbon debt that is created in its production.
Representative Anderson, you follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't doubt your statistics and numbers, but again, they are heavily subsidized at this point anyway, and I would argue that there is no such thing as a carbon-free electricity source. And I support the bill in the sense that all good programs, and I think this has been a good program. It's developed a lot of programs and incentivized a lot of things. But at some point, I think programs have to have an end, and I think this is an appropriate time to do it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of following up with what Rep. Anderson was just talking about, I want to ask a question to Mr. Eloff about when this was put together 30 years ago or so. It was very challenging. It was very contentious. And I've been through a lot of those conversations with different programs long after that. Did this program ever have the discussion, or was there ever a sunset date put into something like this, Mr. Eloff?
Mr. Eloff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, I don't recall a sunset date, no. As Representative Jones said, the RDA was tied to the cast at Prairie Island. As long as they are there, the RDA is operating as well.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and I think that's a good reason why there wasn't at the time, because, again, there was the cask storage was super important. We still is today. We need to make sure that those payments continue. That is important, and I think there's a plan for this to do that. But I just – my question is, and I want to thank the chair for bringing this forward to me because and to all of us, because this has to be looked at every so often about, is this antiquated? Is this something that we still need today? Is it still hitting the goals and the marks that we want to have? But that's what we need to keep asking ourselves about these programs are, is, because our Xcel Energy customers, which I have a large part of my county has Xcel Energy in the northern part of the county, they care about their electricity rates, and this affects them. So we need to have this conversation. Is this still a program that gives us a good return on the investment for all of those ratepayers? I think this is a conversation we need to have. Again, when I pass big legislation that's very troubling, sometimes sunset clauses actually go a long way to kind of know that this conversation will sunset after a certain number of years. At that point, everybody can kind of look to see what does the world look like today around this issue. And then you can make a decision whether you want to continue it or end it. But this is where this is at today, I think, members, that Xcel rate customers are asking us to look at their rates because they can't take these big increases anymore. We are putting more mandates on Xcel Energy overall with new business employer mandates that will affect all of our rates as well. You know, ESST, paid family medical are going to be new costs that will be passed on to not only Xcel Energy rate customers, but all of us. If we have a job, and if we're getting power from somebody, those will be passed on to us. So as all of these things get piled on, slivered on over the years, it is time that we take a look at programs that started years and years ago, and does this still make sense? So again, it's been 30 years. This is a good conversation to have, and we just need to make sure that we look at what is it doing today? What is it costing? Is it giving us the feedback? Because again, like Representative Anderson said, the solar industry has done an amazing job over the last 25, 30 years to become more efficient, to stand up on its own. And I'm not saying that this program was a bad idea from the beginning. It helped it stand up. But I'm glad the conversation's here. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing it forward.
Representative Aiken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the great conversation today. I think we heard some great input from many stakeholders on this issue. And Representative or Chair Swazinski, you had said that additional utilities or utilities in addition to Xcel were also making claims that they were going to be able to reach their 2040 goals early. I'm wondering, I haven't heard that from other utilities in Minnesota. I'd be interested to hear which ones are making that claim.
Chair Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Murphy, Representative Aiken. I would have probably stated if I could remember. But I had heard that someone had maybe said that, but that was all. Otherwise, I would have said that.
So. Representative Aiken.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And so if anyone's listening, I would be very interested if there are other utilities in that situation. I think that's great. And I think, as we have pointed out in committee already, congratulations to Xcel for doing that and also looking at cutting rates and giving rebates to their ratepayers. So as we are thinking, having this conversation today, I think it's really important that we look at some of the other things that are happening around us. We are no longer able to partner with the federal government as we have over the last several years. Many of the grants and funding that was supposed to be coming to Minnesota through the Inflation Reduction Act has been pulled back, which is unfortunate for many reasons. And as was announced today, tariffs with Canada. If we had had the presentation from the Department of Commerce, we would find out that Minnesota and the United States are in a trade deficit with Canada, mainly because of energy costs. And so when we talk about, you know, Flint Hills, when we talk about natural gas, all of those rates are going to go up because of the tariffs being imposed by Canada. And so there are pressures from outside of Minnesota that are going to impact us here. And when we have programs like the Renewable Development Account, and I think it's been brought up by a few people how important it is that we have affordable, reliable, and clean energy, and I couldn't agree more. And I think we've heard from many people today about examples of RDA investments that have resulted in more affordable energy. And one that is a pride of mine is the Solar on Schools program that we passed initially several years ago. And, you know, energy costs in schools are the second line item in their budget after staff. And putting solar on those schools can help save schools money that they can redirect into classrooms or even reduce tax levies. And so I think that the whole idea of affordability is one that this program has worked very hard amongst many different types of examples to make more affordable. And Mr. Eloff brought up that when this idea first started, it was looking toward wind, and it gave credits for wind energy that was produced. And it then evolved into solar. And more recently, in my time on the committee, we have gone from solar. We're now seeing storage. We're seeing geothermal. We're seeing, you know, electric school buses. It is continuing to innovate, and we need to be able to continue to help foster that for our state, for reaching our clean energy goals, for reducing carbon emissions. And I find it just really exciting that we have the low-income solar rewards that were spent within 6 weeks of the year, that there are so many opportunities that low-income Minnesotans are not able to benefit from. And so to be able to be targeting those people who need help paying their energy costs more, you know, the most, that's a really great program. And rather than cutting it, we should be adding more to it. We should be helping more Minnesotans in that way. So we've heard just incredible, I think, testimony. I don't want to repeat things, but I appreciate the interest in reducing costs in energy rates, and I think this program helps do that. So I would encourage members to vote against this bill. Thank you.
Representative Hollins.
Sorry, I'm a bit of a mess today. Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Chair Szczesinski. So the first thing I want to say is I represent approximately 44,000 XL ratepayers, and I have literally never received an email or a phone call or had a discussion about wanting to get rid of the RDA fund. Never. I have several constituents in this room, and I actually was texting with them, asking them, how much is it? How much do they pay into the RDA? Because I was curious. The number I've gotten is between 70 cents and $1.25 a month. Now, I also looked at my current XL bill, which is $341 this month. So honestly, $1.25 per month is not something that I'm particularly concerned about. I'm more concerned about the fact that my energy rate is so high and that my house is not staying warm like I would like it to. But my big question here is, I thought it was really interesting that the Chamber of Commerce came up to testify in favor of this. And I was wondering, Chair Szczesinski, if you know who XL's biggest customer is, like who's most likely to get a benefit from getting rid of the RDA?
Chair Szczesinski.
Mr. Chair, that's a great question. I don't know.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, other chair.
All good.
I see that we have some...
Sit on that chair.
Representative Wiener's daughter and I had a good laugh about that last time when she was here. We're both children. I'm like a six-year-old. But what I was wondering, I see that we have some XL representatives here in the room, and I'm wondering if they could speak to who their largest customers are.
Would any of the representatives like to step forward? Seeing none.
Oh. Working on it.
Mr. Evans, please introduce yourself for the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Evans with XL Energy. A long walk for a short answer. We're not permitted to tell you that.
Sorry for making you walk so far.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Mr. Evans. I appreciate that. I think, to my mind, when I hear about this fund and I hear about my constituents saying that they pay approximately a dollar a month to fund this, the only thing I can think, and the fact that the chamber came up and testified in favor of this bill, is leading me down a path to say that there are big businesses that are paying more into this fund than the average XL ratepayer. And I have to believe that as a representative of 44,000 XL ratepayers, I am representing them, their interests, the projects that this fund brings to their community and brings to communities across the state of Minnesota. I'm not representing big businesses here. I don't mind if they have to pay in more. They have the pocketbooks to pay in more, and people in my district can pay approximately a dollar per month. And it's supported great projects that have impacted my local community and also outside of my local community. And I advertise those to my constituents. I tell them about Sabanthony getting to have geothermal in their community center in Minneapolis, and they are happy about it, even if it's not impacting their community directly. So I would also say that there's no way that I could support this bill. And I would certainly like to dig in a little bit deeper on who is actually going to benefit from this bill, because I don't think it's the people of Minnesota.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually just wanted to appreciate something Mr. Representative Baker had been talking about. Really, this kind of, we haven't had too much of a back and forth. We've just been more to the speakers over here. And I think, I wish we could actually do more of that and have just more kind of robust discussions about I don't say philosophies, but I think it's helpful to do that. Because I don't disagree about the idea of we talked about or we decided something 30 years ago we should maybe revisit. Was it, you know, does that decision from 30 years ago still serve us? I do think, you know, we do need all those stakeholders in the room in order to really fully have that conversation. But I think to the broader point around the benefit, or I guess this is a fee on ratepayers right now, and we're talking about for renewables. I think we should also have the same discussion around the benefits that we are giving to fossil fuel companies, as Representative Kraft had kind of alluded to. And so, you know, in the spirit of like, okay, we made the decisions about the RDA 30 years ago. I wanted to know, how long have we had fossil fuel subsidies around? And it's actually more than 100 years. 1913 was when the first intangible drilling cost deduction went in, which allows for deductions when an oil well is set up and running. So those are all the costs that can be deducted. And recently, in front of U.S. Congress, they said that if that were to be removed, it would put $13 billion back to taxpayers in the United States. So I say yes, let's have these bigger conversations about these subsidies that have been set up many, many years ago. But we need to be having all of those conversations at the same time. It can't just be a singular one around the RDA.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and apologies. I was talking to a constituent, so I missed some of the middle, so I hope that I'm not revisiting information that was going through in the middle there. But last year, Representative Hollins carried a bill for Ramsey and Washington counties for an anaerobic digester in Scott County. It would be both in Representative Bakeburg and my district. It kind of spans both of them. And they received $5 million last year through RDA, and they're asking for more this year because the Trump administration has cut significant funds to make this project happen and to do a lot of things that we need and providing clean energy and all of that that world there. So how, what do you suppose happens with things like this that are, with your bill, with things that are in process? Like, are they just out the project that already millions of dollars has been invested in it? And also this constituent is a, the location is also the chair of, board chair of the state chamber. And so it's really interesting to me that state chamber's four-year bill, but that state chair, board chair is very much involved in this, and he's a really great guy and a friend of mine. And so I'm just very curious as to how you would plan for this to move forward for things that are in process.
Chair Susinski.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Representative Tapke, you know, I don't know the intricacies of that. So it's my understanding if they've received $5 million, is the project going? Like, have they begun construction on the project or not? Those would all have to be questions you'd have to ask. And, you know, if you want to maybe have to reach out to those folks, you know, to see where that project is, you know, if they've broke ground already, if they've already invested money in it, you know, just where the project, you'd probably have to bring that up to them. And then I'd probably better be able to answer that question for you.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Yeah, I know the answers to those things. I'm asking what you think about how your bill affects projects that are in process and where things are at, because there's a lot of projects that are moving forward with the hope of getting RDA money and that are very, very important for the future of renewable energy in our state. Like, what do you personally think as to how this will affect where this industry is headed if your bill were to pass?
Sure. Chair Susinski.
Representative Murphy and Representative Tapke, I don't know, like, then I would have to ask you, if you know the answer, then I would ask a question of you, like, have they already broke ground on the project? Are they already building the project? I don't know those, like, I have to, in order to answer that question, I have to know, like, where the project's at. Like, where?
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Chair Murphy and Chair Swiszynski. So I guess I'm asking my question poorly then, I'm sorry. What I'm trying to get at is what you think your bill, not specifically to this project, one slice of things, to projects in the aggregate as to that are in process right now and are working toward more energy efficiency, like what you think your bill will do positively or negatively to that industry that we really want to continue moving forward.
Chair,
Chair Murphy, Representative Tapke, then it would just, if we're not talking about specific, I thought we were talking about a very specific project. So it really depends on where it's at. So if you literally have a project that's already signed a contract and it's being built, that's much different than a project that's just been talked about and potential. So if they're, like in the case of that, if they've already received $5 million, my guess is that they would have to figure out what they're going to do with the rest of their funding. You know, I'm not sure what their total cost would be, so let's just take that project an example. So if they've already received $5 million, let's say they're coming back maybe to the RDA for another five, then the question needs to be asked, does that cover the cost of the entire project? Or then is there still, you know, is there private funding to the bill? And then that $5 million would just disappear because it's already been promised, right? And so that money just doesn't get swept back in. You know, there, like whether it's a bonding project or whether it be a project like this, I think you have a certain window of time that you actually have to start and spend those dollars. So that would have a big part to play with it. And so, you know, that's most of this bill. It's not just a straight repeal. It's an understanding that some of the dollars are already spoken for. So like the Made in Minnesota, those are incentives that have gone out. And so if you've signed a contract and you've already made an agreement with an entity up in the Iron Range outside of XL territory that's already producing solar panels, then that contract would be paid out. And so then we're taking those dollars out of the RDA money instead of returning that back to ratepayers and then putting that, because it's, you know, the legislature as a whole decided to spend it, then those dollars would be coming out of that. Does that make sense? All right, thanks.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had just a couple of things that I forgot. First is, do we have a fiscal note on this bill?
Chair Susinski.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's on its way, and this bill's plan is to go to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Which is also a Finance Committee.
Representative Aiken.
And this is the Finance Committee of Jurisdiction. Certainly. And so it is our custom here in the Minnesota House of Representatives that the fiscal note be present before it leaves committee. And so I would encourage you to think about that and just say that. And I would ask for a roll call on the bill, please.
Aiken requests a roll call. Chair Swazinski, do you have any final words on the bill?
Certainly. Thank you, Representative Murphy, or Chair Murphy, representatives from the Energy Committee. This bill has a real chance to make some impact on ratepayers across the state. With the 2040 bill being put into law, I want to remind members that what we're doing is raising the cost of carbon-free energy to potentially replace it with carbon-free energy that will displace carbon-free energy. That's what the bill is looking to do, is reduce the cost of energy for industrial users, for homeowners, for businesses, for schools, and not choosing winners and losers by who pays more so that some can pay less, but that we can all pay, in some cases, a little bit less, and some pay, in some places, a lot more less. And so with that, I would be open to calling it a removal of a tariff for the export of energy from Monticello and Prairie Island, if that would help get support for this bill. Thank you.
Chair Swazinski renews his motion that House File 1738 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. The CLA will take the roll.
Chair Swazinski.
Aye.
Vice Chair Murphy.
Aye.
Lead Acom.
No.
Representative Kraft.
No, but I like how you are promoting tariffs now.
Getting rid of this one.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Representative Baker.
Aye.
Representative Carroll.
No.
Representative Frazier.
No.
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Igo.
Aye.
Representative Jones.
No.
Representative Mahmoud.
No.
Representative Mekland.
Aye.
Representative Sexton.
Yes.
Representative Weiner.
Yes.
There being 8 ayes and 7 nay, the motion passes. Members, that's all the business we have for today.
Did you need to remake the motion of where she's going, okay. Representative Chair?
Chair Swazinski renews the motion that House File 738 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Aiken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just am going to put one final plug in. As you know, Thursday we will get the budget forecast, and on Thursday in committee we have a pretty light schedule. So I think there would be ample time for our agencies to come in and do a brief budget overview, and it would be certainly important information as we move forward after hearing the budget, the budget forecast.
Thank you, Representative Aiken. Members, that's all the business we have today. We'll be meeting again on Thursday, March 6th at 1 p.m. This meeting is adjourned.